All right. Let's just do this thing.
Do
man.
We need an intro? We got the intro. Great.
All right.
We ready.
This is Dylan.
This is Nick. And you're listening to
Colloquium.
Hello, and welcome to Colloquium. We are here for our, I think, 10th recording of Colloquium. We're going strong.
Number 10.
I think we keep having more and more ideas, so I don't see us stopping anytime soon. We joke about it, but...
Right. Yeah, yeah. I was just actually telling them I was thinking about quitting, so... Yeah.
We just bought these nice new mics and invested a little bit of money into this, and Nick shows up. He's like, all right, guys, I think I'm done with this.
Yeah, that's all right. You know, I actually think we're getting into a little bit of a groove, honestly. So I think this would be a good time to bring up too, though, that Dan, our sound guru and our musical guy, is heading on to DC here pretty soon to go to grad school at the JP2 Institute.
Yes. Yeah, we're super excited about that.
Right. Or is it Catholic U or is it the JP2 Institute or is it the same thing?
Both, he says.
Okay,
yeah,
he mouths right.
both to us. So.
It's the same thing.
Yeah, that's we're super excited for him. He is planning on graciously continuing to help us out. So we're excited about that, but we won't be able to. He's asking about coffee.
Can you say that again a little bit? Where's the coffee? It should be right there next to the coffee pot. The yellow bag behind right there. He found the coffee, everyone.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a first. Yeah. I don't think we've ever been interrupted in that way, but it happened.
Producer Dan.
All right. Anyway, we're going strong. We've had a lot of listeners. Depends on your definition of a lot, but yeah, we've had listeners.
I think so too. Yeah, maybe we should say to our listeners, thanks for listening.
Thank you.
Thanks for putting up with all of our weird mannerisms and conversations and for just being a part of our colloquium, if you will. Yeah. So
Many of you, I don't know how to interpret the statistics, but we've had several episodes with over 100 plays. So that's good. We haven't really started really advertising that much. So that means people are telling friends about it, which is cool.
Maybe I've said this before, but all hate mail goes to Dylan.
Yes.
All nice things go to me. So just remember that as you figure out whether or not you want to send this stuff.
Yeah. And please take that seriously. Nick's ego. Nick's ego is very fragile and we don't want to break that. So nice things to Nick, please.
Yeah. I like to preserve it.
All right, Nick, what are we talking about?
This is your topic that you picked. So why are you asking me?
All right. I'll introduce our topic. You want to ask me what we're talking about?
Yeah, sure. Dylan, what are we talking about today?
Nick, thank you for asking.
No problem.
Today,
man.
We're going to talk about masculinity.
Oh, gosh. We know all about that.
Yeah. Maybe a thing or two. I don't know how much. Yeah. You can ask those who know us. I don't know if they think we're masculine or not. But I guess to tackle this topic, you kind of have to ask the question, what is masculinity? Like when you think about masculinity, what comes to mind? Mm,
great question. So obviously the biological male sex comes to mind when you say masculinity.
Sure.
So let's just get that out of the way first. I also think too, it's very associated with fatherhood, that aspect. I don't know if we're going to get into that a lot, but I associate masculinity with being a father, the physical and spiritual leader of a household, being one who serves, makes a gift of himself. What else? Those are just the initial things that I think of when I think of masculinity.
Yeah, I think that's going to be a big phrase in talking about the theology of it. So, right, gift of self.
Yeah, I'm also thinking too, just like being firm or being, you know, kind of that strong figure. Yeah, that's what I think of when I think of masculinity.
Yeah, that's great. So I love this topic. And I think the reason why is because I think in general, we're really confused. We as a culture, as a church, as everything, society today is very confused about what exactly this means. Because you have changing cultural tides on towards just femininity and masculinity in general. And I think with that, there's a lot of confusion about, okay, what exactly does it mean? If it doesn't mean one thing, like for instance, like the tough macho man stereotype, right? We're told we're not supposed to be that. Okay, so if we're not that, then what are we? And I don't know that there's really a readily available definition of something to replace that kind of macho man mentality.
Sure.
And so I think of, you know, growing up, I think I was confused as to what it meant to be a man because of hearing kind of these conflicting things. And I think we're going to get into a little bit more of what that looks like. But I guess what would you say, like, growing up, Nick, what was the impression of masculinity that you had? What were you supposed to be in order to be a man?
That's a really great question. Let's break that down for a second. First, before I get into my own experience, I think, there is this idea. I want to elaborate on what you said. There is this idea of, I have to, a macho man is kind of, something that I feel like is valued in our culture. I have to be this, tough, strong, whatever, non-emotional dude. But I think there's, also an element of, if I'm wavering towards the side of actually being a macho man or whatever you want to call it, I have a desire to be an emotional being as well. So there's kind of both sides of a man of, I want to be this strong masculine dude, but I also want to be this, I want to have emotions. I want to be able to share those things with, other men or women. So I see it as kind of a virtue of masculinity, the kind of middle ground between two vices, because we don't want to be all macho and we don't want to be all emotional, but we want that healthy middle ground that is the virtue. So anyway, I think for me, on where I was kind of on the virtue scale was maybe I desired to be a little bit, just a stronger man or just a little bit tougher. Yeah, to have that kind of, stronger masculine sense than I feel like I had growing up. That was always a struggle for me to attain, I feel like, just that image of me being the guy who, women felt safe around, physically, or, to be the guy that was just the natural leader of a group of men just because of my presence, that kind of a thing. That's kind of what I sought after and desired as a man growing up.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. I think for myself, I think like I alluded to earlier, I think I grew up a little confused because I think I found, like, just kind of from, at boys and later, adolescents that, I was friends with and grew up around, I kind of felt like this pressure to be tough and to be less emotional, even to be like the macho man, for lack of a better term, kind of stereotype. But then I also found myself to be a little bit more emotional and in some ways, maybe a little bit more emotionally mature than my peers. And I found myself connecting more with women at times, or with girls. I mean, this is me in middle school, high school growing up. And I didn't really know how to make sense of that. Did that make me less masculine? Did that actually make me more masculine? Was everybody else less masculine? And until recently, Nick, I was really confused about that. And I think even as I became an adult and, I still didn't really understand what it actually, I knew what it didn't mean in some ways, but I didn't know what it actually meant to be masculine. And it wasn't until really probably a couple years in the last few years, I can't remember when it was that I first read this article, but I read an article that really changed my whole thinking on this. And the article is called "Today's Problem with Masculinity is Not What You Think." I think it came out in maybe 2018. So it's been circulating for a few years. It was on medium.com from a guy named Benjamin Sledge, I think is his name. And doing a little background, this man, the article is not really written from a Christian perspective. I did find out he is a Christian, which makes sense from reading the article. But basically, this is a military veteran, writing his own reflection as a father now and a husband on what masculinity is and why we're so confused about it. And in this, I shared this with Nick before the podcast and I think he quite liked it as well. Nick, I'm talking to you.
I loved it.
I addressed our audience there.
Right.
So there's two things that he says in this article that I think we're going to break down, but it just casts so much light on this issue for me. So he says, Most guys are growing up believing two lies about manhood or masculinity. Number one, we view roughhousing, playing with toy swords, and fake war as a sign that our boys will become psychopaths because of recent events. Two, men falsely believe sensitivity and visible displays of emotions are signs of weakness. Okay, so when I read these two things, on the one hand, we see, being tough, roughhousing, all these things, like that's toxic masculinity. Can't do that. But on the other hand, you're not supposed to be emotional either because that's what women are. And when I read this article, it just all clicked for me. Why, like, I've been told my whole life that I can't be either emotional or tough. Mm. What the heck am I supposed to be, Nick?
Right. Mm. A robot, sounds like.
Yeah.
Sounds like a robot.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm. Yeah. A couple of things that come to mind when you say those two things. Maybe I'll talk about the first one, the, you know, viewing roughhousing or playing, you know, fake war as, you know, dangerous to the health of boys growing up. I actually really value, just from a human experience, I really remember just playing Power Rangers with my friends growing up, you know, playing tag out in the yard, you know, playing, heck, we played with plastic lightsabers when I was in high school. I mean, like, I was old and we were playing with, I just really value those times with my, you know, guy friends, with the boys that I was friends with growing up. It was just really memorable experiences. I don't have any wounds from playing plastic lightsabers with, you know, my friends, and I don't have any, you know, playing Power Rangers. I feel like that was a desire deep within my heart to be the hero, you know, to be, and anyway, if you're wondering, Dan's coffee is now done. So if you heard that beeping sound in the back, if you want some, feel free to email, colloquium at whatever gmail.
Colloquium show at gmail.com.
But yeah, I really see that as the roughhousing, the playing Power Rangers as a desire to be a hero as a man. To be that heroic figure. Anyway.
Yeah, I think it's awesome that you identified that, Nick, because so I've talked about this article, you know, really, I talked about it a lot during my time in Focus. I've talked about it with high school students. It's really been something I've loved bringing up in my ministry over the last 2 or 3 years. And one of the questions I like asking people when we bring up this conversation is the question of what, when you were a boy, what did you daydream about? Hmm. Nick, what did you daydream about?
It's a beautiful question. Yeah, I can't really remember when I was 10 what I would daydream about, but, you know, specifically. But the things that I valued, I think, growing up as a boy were obviously sports. I would always daydream about, you know, I played baseball through middle school, so I would daydream about hitting that walk-off home run you know, running around the bases. Mm-hmm. I'm sure Dylan was a baseball player, so I'm sure you dreamed about that from time to time. Scoring the winning goal in the 90th minute of a soccer game. That's what I would dream about, you know? I think looking back now, I would daydream about being the hero. Yeah. About being that guy who was the one who would step up and do the thing that no one else could do.
Right.
That was something that was always prevalent on my mind and heart. Just, you know, being, I don't know if successful is the right word, but doing that thing that was, you know, no one else could accomplish.
Right. Yeah. And it typically had a physical element to it, right?
Absolutely.
So as I identified like multiple different sports, dreaming of success in that, in a physical endeavor.
Right.
So myself, I have this very vivid daydream that I would have all the time as a kid. And the daydream was there's a robber breaking into my house. And I was home alone and I had to fend him off somehow. So I'd like figure out, okay, where's like the closest set of knives? Like, how can I like defend myself against this robber? Hmm. And when I've asked this question to men, boys, you get the same kind of general answers. You know, it's not the same story, but not all of them sound like what we just shared. But overwhelmingly, the majority, that's what guys daydream about. Sports. Some kind of physical exertion, battle, defending something against an aggressor, an unjust aggressor. And I think these things actually tell us something about ourselves and what we're made for. And I think that's true because if you ask a room full of women, they don't tell you the same thing.
Yeah.
They do what they dream about. I mean, I'm not a woman. I'm not a woman. So I can't speak for all women. But they're not daydreaming about these things like we are.
Right.
Okay, so what is it about our masculinity that makes us dream about sports, warfare, defending our home against an unjust aggressor?
Yeah, gosh, I assume you're asking me. Let's see.
That'd be nice if you could muster up an answer.
Yeah, I think it is tied to fatherhood in a lot of ways. Being the leader, being the... You know, the one who serves and who gives of himself or who, sets the standard or example. I think that's very much tied to masculinity. Yeah. Those kind of themes centered around fatherhood and leading. Yeah.
I think maybe I'd add to that. It reveals that I think we're made for a battle of some kind. And that's ultimately spiritual warfare.
Yeah. I think so are women. If we're going along those lines,
you know,
I think women are also made for that spiritual battle as well. You know, I don't think that changes with masculinity versus femininity. So we have to ask the question of why are masculine, you know, people, men, why are they daydreaming about this and women aren't?
Right.
I think it's definitely a different thing. Why are men going to war, you know, physical war, and, you know, women not? That's a different political issue maybe, but,
sure.
But why has that always been the thing? Definitely a difficult question.
And that's a great point, because I think when it comes to talking about masculinity and femininity and roles of men and women, like it's a hard thing to talk about, because in a certain sense, as men, we are built for spiritual battle, and that manifests itself in our masculinity in a certain way, I think. But that doesn't mean that women don't also have an element of that.
Right.
So I think sometimes the ways in which we express who we are in our biological sex, in the way we live that out, are subtle. Sometimes the differences are subtle, but I think it's important to talk about. So one thing I always, even before I like had this framework to think about it, and we're going to get more clear on what this framework is, I even would think about, it's like, okay, so men are supposed to be tougher. If we're supposed to be tougher, like, is that like, does that mean all men are supposed to be tough? What if a man's emotional? Like, is he less of a man? And I kind of learned to start thinking of it as generalities, right? So it'd be boring if all men were the same and all men were on the exact same spot of the spectrum from, you know, toughness to feelings, right?
Right.
Just like it'd be boring if all women were the same level of emotional, you know? And so I think it's important to preface this thing. So if we say something like, there is an element of toughness and like spiritual, like being the spiritual defender that a man should have, and you're a man and you feel, I feel like I'm on the more emotional side of things.
Right.
That's not actually a bad thing. And I think we'll maybe get to a little more why.
Yeah, I think so. It kind of occurred to me, and we don't have to go anywhere with this in the conversation if we don't want, but it kind of occurred to me that we were, you know, just inherently in the conversation, putting toughness and sensitivity on kind of the same scale and opposed to one another. I'm wondering if that's even what we should be doing. I'm wondering if sensitivity is even opposed to toughness in that way. I'm wondering if they should just be on different scales.
Right.
Toughness being on one side and weakness being on the other. You know, sensitivity being on one side and, you know, hardened being on the other. You know, two different scales that are different. And men both need to be in a certain place on both of those scales.
Right.
I think that makes sense.
I think that's a great way of looking at it.
I'm putting this this great visual on the table that we're talking on right now with my hands. So shame on you for not being able to see.
I mean, it didn't help me that much. It was an okay visual, but I think what that highlights too is that one, we need to not see these things in competition with each other. Toughness is not the opposite of an emotional.
Right.
That's actually, I think, a really important first thing to identify.
Right.
Two, and this is going to lead into Benjamin Sledge in this article, his answer. What he says the answer is he says men are called to be what he calls a warrior poet. A warrior poet. So his solution is that, okay, we're told these two lies. One's you can't be tough. One is you can't be emotional. And with this warrior poet that we're going to break down, this idea of the warrior poet, he's answering, actually, no, you're supposed to be both. You're supposed to be tough and you're supposed to be emotional. So let's maybe look at these one by one, Nick, and figure out, okay, what does that look like? What is a virtuous way of living that out? And maybe what is a non-virtuous way of living that out?
Sure thing.
So let's maybe, we've touched on warrior. So let's start with poet.
Okay.
What if a man's supposed to be a poet, what do you think he means by that? What do you think that means for who we are?
Yeah. So I think, especially since in the last 5 years or so, I've really started to take my relationship with the Lord seriously and really, you know, have a daily prayer life and, you know, try to do his will in all things. I think this side of my masculinity, I've started to value a lot more, this idea of being a poet. And kind of what I mean is just being in touch with, you know, again, my emotional side, or really, I think it's tied to my, my self-knowledge and also the way in which I implement creativity in my life too. I think it's very much tied to being a poet, you know, just having an artistic side of, you know, whatever it is, playing music, desiring to, be creative, draw, things like that. I think, that's been a huge fruit of my spiritual life over the past 5 years, is implementing this poet side of my warrior poet masculinity. Yeah.
Yeah. That's beautiful. What would you say is masculine about that?
Good question. I don't know immediately. I don't know. I think maybe that's tied to the human experience, is being obviously emotionally sensitive in the right way, or creating. That is very much Christ-like, right? Or divine is creating. The ultimate creator is. The creativity comes from that ultimately. So I think maybe that's more of a human thing than a masculine thing. I think I brought that up maybe is because that's de-emphasized in masculinity.
Sure.
And I guess my faith life, my relationship with the Lord has brought that back in my life a little bit.
Yeah. So masculinity is a way of living out humanity.
Right.
And if you're not living that in a human way, you're maybe living that in a more animalistic or a more robotic way.
Right.
And so, maybe the poet isn't inherently or specifically only a masculine thing, but it is the virtuous way to live out masculinity. Right. I think that's a good answer.
Yeah, I think I would say too, with just to sum it up, I think masculinity and femininity in our culture, in our society, have different elements of the human experience that are being attacked. I think this is, the poet side again, being able to be sensitive and display emotion, and also, the creativity side of poetry, that's just a thing in masculinity that's being attacked more so than on the feminine side.
Right.
Is what I would say about that.
Yeah. And I think to add to that, Nick, I think about the role of kind of what you started with, fatherhood, the role of the man in the family, right? There's an element of protector and defender. In a sense, that's, historical, biological, that's kind of been the natural role we've tended to take. And there's an element in which our Christian idea of marriage with the father as the spiritual head, imaging Christ and the relationship between Christ and the church, takes on that analogy as well. And okay, if the role is protector and defender of who? Women and children.
Right.
Okay. Women and children need us to be able to emotionally relate to them. And if we're not being the poets, which is ultimately what that, like you identified, it's that creativity, it's that having the head, being able to dream, being able to connect on an emotional level is really essential, I think, to fulfilling that role. Because if we're just being, I protect family, macho man, you're not actually protecting them. You're not giving them anything substantially human to live by. And so I think in order to live out this role, we have to be poets, and it can't solely be this warrior mentality.
Wow. Yeah. I'm actually, I have an excuse to bring up Penny and Sparrow again. So yes. All right.
Great. I actually don't know where you're going this time. So I'm excited.
No, I think you'll like it. There's a song that Penny and Sparrow wrote called Honest Wage. Maybe you've heard it. It's one of their more popular ones. But basically it's written in basically from the perspective of the older brother in the prodigal son story.
Oh, cool.
That's the way it's written, except the brothers are portrayed as lovers and the father is instead the woman. So that's the way it's portrayed.
Okay.
Anyway, the chorus of the song is very beautiful. And I didn't really understand it fully until we kind of had this conversation. But the way it goes is, I wish it was easier to kiss you on the mouth like it is to work hard and earn an honest wage.
Whoa.
That's the way the chorus goes. So the gist of that is, again, the man is saying to, the woman, it's harder to kiss you on the mouth to have that emotional sensitive side. Mm. It's harder to be there for you in that way than it is to just go off and work and do my thing as a man in that way, away from you. Wow. Wow, what a powerful few verses, and it just speaks so true into our struggle and the human experience. So let's give it up for Penny and Sparrow again, ladies and gentlemen. Wow. Any thoughts on that, Dylan?
Yeah, I love that. Yeah, thank you for sharing. I think it's there's a really strong truth to that. Yeah, it's easier to not show emotion. It's easier to not relate. Maybe this goes back a little bit to our vulnerability, our nakedness conversation from the last episode, where it's hard, because if I am vulnerable with another person, if I expose myself, if I try to engage on this emotional level, I might get hurt. And it can sometimes be easy to let that kind of just stay deep within us and not let that come to the surface. And I think that's a big problem. I think we see that with a lot of people are trained to do that, whether it's by society, whether it's by their fathers.
Right.
And the easy thing to do is to not open up.
Yeah, absolutely. I didn't mean to cut you off. Were you done?
No, you're good.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Yeah, again, it's a cycle too, right? So if, a father or, the leader of the household doesn't model that for his sons, vulnerable and sensitive when necessary to his wife and his kids. It's a cycle. I mean, the son sees that and models the behavior of the father, builds habits for 18 years while he's in that house. And now he's supposed to go on and be a father and a husband himself. And what's he supposed to do? He's had 18 years of habits and watching someone who has been portraying this poetry side of masculinity incorrectly. Now we've got this cycle of, I had a model that was incorrect. Now I'm doing it incorrectly. And then, now I'm teaching my kids to do it incorrectly. So it's this vicious cycle that we have to break out of somehow as men.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the author of the article also talks about that, because I think he's maybe the older end of the millennial generation. So he's talking about his father having fought in wars, and I don't remember which war in particular it would have been, but, it's his grandfather, I think, having fought in World War II.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. So he said his father, or the generation of his father, didn't learn emotional intimacy from his father.
Yeah.
And then they passed on that to what he thinks is his generation, the millennial generation. And so, it's absolutely cyclical. And I think he's identifying that. And that's by no means universal.
Sure.
They're good fathers.
There
but I will say it's really interesting to point out, because when I've asked this question to college age men, I've said, how many of you would say you had an emotionally intimate relationship with your father? Mm. Maybe 80% said no.
Yeah.
They did not. Mm. It was really interesting to talk to the ones who did and hear some of the stories about what that was like. It's not universal, but I think that's where the problem is, because in my experience, that's what so many people have lacked, is that emotional intimacy side of it. And I think one thing to bring up as well is I think it's a problem in the church. I was taught the faith by a lot of middle-aged women. They were my religious ed teachers, and they were great, holy women. But there weren't a lot of young men around being examples for me. In my school, in my church community, there just weren't.
That's hard. Yeah. I think I remember, for some reason, I remember the few male religious ed teachers that I had growing up.
Really?
I feel like I remember them because there were, not as many of them. So, and I think too, I hope this is convicting. I hope by the end of this, we're not done yet, but I hope by the end of this little conversation, this is convicting for the young men that are listening, or even for the older men that are listening. It's never too late to step up, right? Even if you're 99.
Yeah.
But just to, we need that in our church. These kids growing up in the church, girls and boys need men as an example. In the church, step up. If you feel as though you're a good father or a good man, step up and give of yourself in that way.
Yeah, there's a great apostolic exhortation called Into the Breach. Mm. You read that?
I have. Yeah, I've read a lot of it. So no, I think I have read it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's, I don't know, 5 or 10, probably 5 years old.
Right.
From, maybe it's 2016. We'll see. We'll put it in the show notes. Into the Breach is a letter written by the Bishop of Phoenix, Thomas Olmsted is his name. It is a phenomenal, phenomenal letter. It's maybe 15 to 20 pages. You can read it. He's basically calling out men to step up in the church. And he talks about what this crisis of masculinity, I think, looks like in the church especially. And I think the effects of that are apparent. Whether that's the vocations crisis, whether that's the crisis of the lack of fatherhood in the family, people who grow up fatherless, and how we know that can perpetuate itself, right? Absent fathers lead to a lot of bad consequences, you know? So a lot of the prisons are filled with people who didn't have present fathers. That's not universal again, but consequences of sin. But Into the Breach talks about what it looks like to step up. And I think it was really inspiring for me to read and challenging me to step up myself as a man.
Right. Yeah, I think so. Yeah, this masculinity conversation, I think, was always going to flow towards fatherhood because I think they're so tied, and that's kind of who we are as men, is, you know, our fathers in whatever way.
Spiritual or natural.
Right, exactly. Yeah, spiritual or natural, that's correct. But I think, too, I want us to get in a little bit to kind of the way men should be in relationship with one another.
Okay.
Not necessarily, you know, the fatherhood side of leading a family per se, but just, you know, again, how men should interact with one another and how that plays into our growth as men, as masculine people in our society.
Yeah.
Do we have any initial thoughts on that?
Yeah. So there's this picture in the article that we've been addressing throughout this where he shares this picture of two men. They're two pretty big, strong men. They're shirtless. It looks like they're on a hike. There's a waterfall and they took a picture. They clearly posed for a picture. I don't know the context. I don't know anything about these two men, but he shares this picture. One of them has the other on his shoulders. So it's an intimate, like you can tell they're close. You know, you don't do that with a stranger. And his analysis of this picture is basically a lot of people would look at this and think that they're gay, but that's not the case. And why is it that we look at maybe a level of intimacy between friends and men and we think, oh, maybe that's something homosexual?
Yeah. Gosh, I don't know. I feel like this is a whole another conversation that we could get into about the way the culture has sexualized pretty much every single relationship there is, you know, possible to be had in our world. That's just another fruit of that, I think. You know, a close relationship has to turn sexual for some reason, which it absolutely does not.
Right.
So again, I think that's a deeper issue that's tied to it. I wanted to mention too, there was another picture that I absolutely loved, if I could give my two cents.
Sure.
In the article, where this soldier and this other soldier in battle, one of the soldiers was, basically holding his fellow soldier in his lap, like caressing his head. Just like this really deeply emotional and intimate moment. Yeah, just like, you know, similar to what you were talking about. But
right.
that picture captured it more for me, I think, okay. of this.
Yeah.
I feel like a physical expression of intimacy should be the fruit of what you're feeling inside. So if you have a, you know, deep love for another man in your life, which you should, if you don't have those men in your life, you should have them. Mm-hmm. And you know, you're in a situation, a serious situation where you feel like you need to, you know, whatever, caress, you know, and if you're in battle and you need to like grab your, you know, brother's head and hold him in an intimate moment, do that. If that's, you know, if you love your brother in an intimate way, like that should be something you should be able to do. Anyway.
Yeah, that's a great point. And that's something Mr. Sledge, I think, identifies as well, because one thing he says is that we all recognize that men are drawn to war for some reason, right? And we think sometimes that that's like the macho-ness of it, right? Mm-hmm. But he says what people don't realize is the level of emotional vulnerability that goes on in war sometimes. And that, I think, is expressed by this picture you're describing of, you know, witnessing death on the front lines, of being on the brink of death yourself and being able to look at your brother and tell him it's going to be okay.
Yeah.
Or maybe not being able to honestly tell him it's going to be okay, but just be there for him.
Right.
And hold him.
Hmm. Yeah, that's a great point. I'm reverting back to kind of our talk a couple weeks ago with nakedness.
Okay.
And how there is this terrible fear, I think, in men of being emotionally vulnerable, you know, of being exposed, emotional exposure, emotional nakedness, you know, and I think war breaks that down a little bit. You know what I mean? It's definitely the breaking men down to their bare bone self, you know, in a way that's so unique. But yeah, there's a beautiful thing when a man, you know, kind of breaks down and exposes himself before another man, and the man says yes, you know, validates him and who he is as a man. Yeah, I'm putting myself out there. You know, in my emotional exposure as a man, if you say no to this, I'm going to feel like I'm less of a man. But since you said yes, I feel like I'm more of a man. Yes, so there's definitely an element of I'm putting myself out there, and we need other men that say yes to that in our lives. Maybe that was too abstract. Did that make any sense at all?
No, that makes sense. All right, I think it's important to, because I think a lot of people don't recognize they want that intimacy. You know, there's a lot of people, and maybe, you know, this has been us at times, where you just want to walk through life and not mess with that,
right?
Not mess with that vulnerability stuff, because it's easier, like we talked about before. But deep down, even if that's you, you want the intimacy. It's what you're created for.
Amen. Amen. Right. Yeah. I also think too, being great as men, we lack great men in our lives. Great, you know, in society right now, we lack men who are committed to being saints, is what I mean by that. You know, and it's so much easier. I've felt the fruit, you know, thank God for these amazing friendships in my life in the past few years or so. But I have felt the amazing fruit of having, you know, men who are striving to be saints, you know, and being able to run alongside them, how much easier it is to be a great man. I'm not saying I'm great, but how much easier it is to be one.
Yeah.
You know, when you have people, you know, especially other men that are running side by side towards that same goal, you know?
Yeah. And this might be a little bold to say too, but as you're saying that, I'm thinking of like married couples or even dating couples. And I think one of the things I've learned over the years is that just how important, even in the midst of romantic relationships, that fraternal, you know, for a guy, his male friendships are, and for a girl, her female friendships are. I think even in marriage, this might be kind of bold, but I think that a husband, a father, a man who's married, there are things that his male friends can provide, ways that they can challenge him that his wife will not be able to.
I feel like that's absolutely true. Yeah, we all need husbands, priests, single people like us. We all need, you know, men in our lives, you know, that are able to push us towards that goal.
Yeah,
I agree. Yeah.
Yeah, so I think that's a real challenge to find those friendships.
Yeah.
What do you think? What's an image of what that looks like? Or maybe an example.
You just mean an example?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the image that we had discussed before was definitely with Lord of the Rings, especially with Frodo and Sam. Now, for those who have seen the movies or read the books, I think you'll kind of understand what we mean. I recently got done reading the books, and I know this has come up in the podcast before, but I was very struck by that, especially during one scene when Frodo and Sam were kind of getting closer to Mount Doom. They're about to drop off the ring. And there is a beautiful scene where Frodo's just exhausted and he's laying there on the side of the road and, you know, and they're resting and Sam's there and Frodo like rests his head on Sam's lap and Sam's like stroking his hair and just a weird, honestly, at first, like, this is weird. You know, these two men are, you know, I think Frodo and Sam are, gosh, they're older, maybe middle-aged, you know, hobbits. So they're, you know, men.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it's just such an intimate thing. And I was trying to decide as I was reading it, whether or not that was okay or, you know, wrong or a little bit too odd. And I think after this conversation, that was just a moment where they were totally just emotionally exposed. And, you know, that was a moment of deep friendship that I think a lot of us don't understand, you know? Anyway, so that's a good example, I think, in our wider culture, especially in that novel.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Just a strong friendship, a strong bond. They're united in a purpose.
Right.
And in fact, it goes back to war, like fighting next to a brother in war. You have a common purpose. You are fighting to the death. You know, Frodo and Sam are fighting for their lives, fighting for the salvation of the Shire, but ultimately the world, you know, Middle Earth, not the world, but yeah.
Right.
Basically the same thing.
Yeah. I think we need to ask that question together as men. You know, or really even for women too, women need to ask this question together as women is, what does deep intimacy with someone of the same sex look like for me? That's a huge question, I think, in our culture, just generally, especially when things are becoming sexualized. It's possible, first of all, going on the assumption that it's possible to have a deep, intimate relationship with someone of the same sex without it being sexualized.
Yeah.
How does that work? What does that look like? What steps do I need to take to, you know, form better, more intimate relationships with the men in my life? Yeah. I think that's a good question to ask. Do we have any, maybe we have some.
Yeah, practicals.
Some practicals for that.
The people like when we do practicals.
Yeah, I think so. I'll tell you what, maybe let's do this. And we can jump back to the question I just asked if you like that better. Why don't we say, okay, as a man, what step or steps can I take to become more of a warrior? And then what step or steps can I take to become more of a poet?
I think we should do that one.
All right. Cool.
Do you want me to start?
Yep.
All right, great. I'll start with poet. I think that's a little easier.
Okay.
So I think of two things. I think one, back to the Nakedness Vulnerability podcast, vulnerability breeds vulnerability. So if you don't have those relationships in your life with other men, initiate, invite others into that. Who are the people that are close to that, who you could form that bond with? How are you being vulnerable with them? How are you giving yourself opportunities to encounter them? Mm-hmm. And then also allow yourself to feel emotion. Maybe this is in prayer even. Allow yourself not to just go through the day and kind of shove your emotions aside. Bring them to the Lord. Feel the emotions and invite the Lord into them.
Wow. That's a beautiful piece of advice, Dylan. I want to repeat that just to make sure everyone heard and understood is... if you're angry with God, if you're frustrated with God, if you're confused with God, he knows that. Why don't you just go ahead and tell him and address it with him? You know what I mean? You just don't hide from God. You can't. You don't have to hide from God anymore. You know, back from our nakedness podcast.
Yeah.
Actually, love talking about being naked. I don't know why.
Yeah.
But again.
Don't make this weird.
Be vulnerable with Jesus. Like he knows what you're going to be vulnerable to him about already. Might as well do it. You know, what a powerful
absolutely
piece of advice from Dylan there.
Yeah.
I totally agree.
Yeah. Do you want to attack the poet as well or go to warrior?
I'll do that. That sounds good. I don't know what I'm going to say yet. So these words that I'm saying are me stalling.
Great.
No. So one thing I would say going back to the creativity side, just kind of exercising your, poetry in that way is find a creative outlet. This might not relate, but find a creative or artistic outlet. I feel like every human being, not just a man, needs a creative or artistic outlet or hobby to, exercise that part of their life.
That's really good. Something I didn't do until I was well into adulthood.
Right.
Picking up the guitar recently has been one of the most life-giving things I've done. And I'm not any good, but like beginning to engage in the creative has been incredible.
Yeah, it seems to, I don't know, it engages that, again, like the emotional side and, whenever I'm feeling something deep in my heart, I should go write a song or something, Anyway, so just, it's good to have that creative outlet to be more human.
Yeah.
That's it for me.
All right. Warriors.
Let's do it.
I'll start since I started. First thing that comes to mind, the St. Michael prayer, to St. Michael, the Archangel. Start praying that. Pray that daily. It's a good reminder of the spiritual battle we're in. And I think I'll actually just leave it at that.
Wow, that's beautiful. Okay, my turn, being a warrior. So this might be some controversial advice. Shoot me down if this is wrong.
Shoot.
But I feel like as a man, it's a really good thing actually to be physically capable. I feel like it is. I mean, that's that desire that to be strong physically and to, you know, be the protector is a, I think is a healthy desire. So if you're not exercising or working out already, why don't you start that up? Maybe that's a hard thing. That's actually part of being a warrior and is doing something that's hard, you know, overcoming something that's difficult. Why don't you exercise your exercise outlet.
Exercise.
So no, I think that's an important thing as a man. One of the most amazing I think this is the most amazing compliment I've ever received, actually, is somebody told me, like, wow, Nick, you're really strong looking. No. I'm just kidding. No, but one of the greatest compliments I ever received was these two women that I had known from a community that I was a part of said, hey, Nick, I just want to let you know, I feel so safe when I'm around you. That was the, think that was the best compliment I've ever received as a man.
Right.
Just to know that I'm giving, you know, the women in my life a sense of being protected.
Right.
Wow. That was such a, good sign for me that I'm headed in the right direction.
And that's a compliment that like is addressed to your whole being. Like there's a physical element to that and an emotional element to it.
I still feel the effects of that compliment. Yeah.
Wow.
And what's tied to that, I think, it's not everything. It's only part of being a man and being the protector, but I think it's tied to, you know, being physically capable, doing your best to be physically capable as a man, a protector. So anyway.
Yeah, I think, Nick, with that, the physical exercise side of it, like exerting, there's something in us, in the physical nature of the masculine being, there's something that I think is a really good example of the spiritual life, of virtue, right? So virtue involves denying ourselves, right? For a greater spiritual good. What do we do when we work out, when we practice hard at some physical task, some sport? We're denying ourselves an immediate physical pleasure for the sake of a greater good, for the sake of becoming stronger.
Right.
So the masculine body, the masculine being images that part of the spiritual life really, really well. The feminine can too. Women can work out, can be physical, play
totally
sports.
True.
And they do that, right? But there's a very particular way in which the masculine genius, the feminine genius is kind of a buzzword in Catholic circles. So we'll say masculine genius too. Right. I think that really captures. Whereas, you know, there are other aspects of the spiritual life that femininity captures. And that's another podcast. We'll have to consult some women and get back to you on that. But I think dealing with like, what we kind of identify as like the emotionally intuitive nature of women, that is vital to the spiritual life. Having compassion, being able to connect, to love deeply, that is a strength they bring to the table. That's something we're also called to as men. So it's not that like women are called to this and men are called to this. It's no, we're called to the same life.
Right.
But we image it in different ways.
Emphasize different aspects of the human experience.
Different aspects.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. If I could say just kind of one thing to the women that are listening to this podcast, if you've sat through this 50 minutes,
these are Nick's words for women.
Yeah. Like, you know, men, we need other men to be, you know, to be the men we're called to be. Absolutely true. Women, we need you to be the men that we're called to be also. We need those gifts that you bring. Like we need holy, you know, striving to be saints, women in our lives, to lift us up and to draw us out of ourselves. So, anyway, that's all I would say to.
Yeah. Women. Let me add to that. Women don't settle.
Yeah.
You know how many women settle for a so-so guy, because they think it's hard to find the right virtuous man. Don't settle. It's not going to be good for you or your family.
Don't settle for Dylan, y'all.
Come on, Nick. Come on.
Someone had to say it.
He did not have to go there. All right. All right. To bring this thing full circle, warrior poet. I really think that's the solution to this problem, as we are called to be both warriors and poets.
Yeah.
And go read the article. It's called Today's Problem with Masculinity Isn't What You Think. It's by Benjamin Sledge. Just Google that. We'll put it in the show notes. Also, Into the Breach. Men, go read it. Women, go read it. It's an incredible exhortation from Bishop Thomas Oldenstead. Those would be two great things to read. Pray about it. I mean, yeah, there is a crisis of masculinity, I think, and it needs to start to be addressed.
Awesome. Yeah, final words from Nick. Guess go play Power Rangers with your friends and write a poem.
Go play Power Rangers. I like that. All right. Well, we have an email, colloquiumshow@gmail.com. Email us. Women, tell us your thoughts. We are obviously a biased perspective. So yeah, send us what you think. Did we just completely fail at this? You know,
remember, hate mail to Dylan.
Right. Right.
Nice. Send things me. To Nick.
Yeah. Sorry. Yeah. So address Dylan so Nick doesn't read it. Okay. This has been our conversation on Colloquium. Join us next time.
Peace.
Be strong and courageous. Do not be frightened and do not be dismayed. Be strong and courageous. Do not be frightened and do not be dismayed. For the Lord your God is with you wherever you go. For the Lord your God is with you wherever you go. Be strong. Be frightened and do not be dismayed.